Hello and welcome to the Grappling with Fatherhood podcast, a place where we talk about the intersection of grappling, jiu-jitsu, and parenting, the lessons learned in each and where they overlap. My name is Blake Hosmeyer. I am a black belt in jiu-jitsu and the father of two small kids. And my co-host, as always, is Uday Malhotra.
What's up, everybody? Uday Malhotra here, also a black belt and also a father of two beautiful little girls.
And this episode is another one of our sort of like the lost episodes, right?
Lost episode.
We originally recorded this back in October on this topic, and due to some unfortunate data mishaps, we lost the episode, but we really thought this was an important topic to address, and we covered some cool things in it. So this is us rehashing some of those things and also talking about what's going on today and how it relates to it. There might be some time hops here, but just know that as of recording this, February 22nd, this is what we're talking about tonight.
You might catch some Halloween references here in February, at the end of February, right?
Exactly. First of all, man, let me check in. How you doing? How's everything going?
Man, doing okay. I can't complain. When we originally recorded this episode, we were on the cusp of throwing my dad's surprise 80th birthday party.
You smashed.
Oh my God, dude. It was so much fun. Everyone was worried. My mom was worried. My brother was worried that he already knew. My brother was insistent on not making it a surprise because of how much more difficult it was going to be. And I'm very stubborn. And I'm also someone who really likes surprises. So I was like, no. I put my foot down. I was like flexible and everything else. I was like, no, this is going to be a fucking surprise, and it's going to be at his 80th birthday, and it's going to be great. And it was the surprise. Like, he was thrilled. We had people come in from Chicago, from all over the country, Colorado, and some of his oldest, most dearest friends. And I'm glad we got to do this for him and make this a special moment for him. He was really worried about turning 80. And he was really sad about it. I guess as you get to that age, you just look at your mortality a little bit differently. And I'm really glad we got to do something really, really special and unique for him. Really happy. I know it made him happy too.
Yeah, not to talk you up too much, but you are really good at putting in the extra effort to do these kind of things. And so inspiring to see, what you do with Christmas, even your daddy daughter dates, like you're not just going to yogurt land, you put some planning in it. And it's so impressive.
Thanks, man. I feel like the people around me, I want to give them the best of me, and I feel like this is giving someone a little surprise, a little bit extra effort it's usually worth it, I appreciate you. I appreciate you saying that, man. Thank you.
Yeah. It does not go unnoticed from the other dads around you.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. We are.
How about you? How are you doing? How are you doing, bro?
We're sick. I'm not sick. I'm the one who's like, it's like right on the edge. And so I've been like getting extra sleep. I've been like going to bed early. I've been doing all the little things to try and stay ahead of it.
Yeah.
Rebecca is down for the count. This is the sickest I've ever seen her since we've been together. She's always the one in our unit that doesn't get it that bad. And so she's got it. And then the kids are just about cycling through it. But outside of that, like everybody's good. And this is just the nature of, this is just the season of life that we're in, where every month or so you cycle through something because the kids pick something up at preschool. And
I was just going to say, they go to school, they catch something, and now it's a family affair, you know?
Yeah. And so, the first couple times it was like, oh man. And now it's just like, all right, we're rolling with it, everything else is actually going really well. Milo just
How's your gig? It's not new anymore. How's the job going?
The job is it's going. It's low stress. Or maybe I have just a different perspective about it, right? Like I think about
you're pretty good at modulating that kind of stress, right? Like you have a good way of juggling it and not letting it age you or bog you down, right?
Depends. I'm getting better at it. You know, I used to be the guy that I think I mentioned this before, like I always had the work laptop with me and I was always doing a little bit all the time, you know, and these days it's just, this is a kind of job where I can close the laptop and walk away. And I feel very, very grateful for that. You know, it's not the most creative writing that I've done. It's not the coolest gig. That's for a cool organization for sure. And the products that we're working on are really cool, but it's not the sexiest job. And that's sometimes... that's okay. And like, it's weird being like, for me, because I've always been, you know, I'm starting to realize it's weird. I'm like 40, I'm pretty deep in my career. And I finally realizing that like what I want and like what I like about the work that I do. Whereas before I was always like just chasing the fucking big fish, you know, like, I want to be at the flashy agency doing the cool work for the big brand, right? For the cool brand. And now I'm like, thinking, oh man, mid-size agency working for small, cool companies that are just trying to do cool shit and having a steady income. Like that sounds really nice. And it's not like,
I was gonna say, man, you said it though. I mean, you're working at a pretty sexy place and you get to shut your laptop off on time.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild, man. That's pretty cool. That's this season in our life, right? Like you said, that's the golden ticket, man.
Yeah.
You know?
And the work is like not work that I resent. And like even it's just, it's weird. It might be a fucking, this is silly. It might be a black belt thing. It might be a, you know, I've been grinding it out as an independent contractor for a long time and having an in-house gig. You just have a different appreciation for things and just things don't matter. Like no disrespect to my coworkers, but like there's all this like, war room talk like, oh, you know, we're butting up heads against this department and like so-and-so, like we got to arm ourselves up and we got to like, just using like stupid military language, you know? And I'm like, hey guys, like this is so silly. Like the thing, and like, I don't care. And like somebody will, you know, do something to inconvenience us. And like, you know, my manager will be like, man, I am so sorry. This is like, I can't believe they're doing this to it. And I'm like, dude, this is such a fucking minor inconvenience, dude, in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, I guess it's a privilege to be able to be that dispassionate, I guess, about the job.
Dude. I mean, is it dispassion or is it just, I think it's a level of maturity that you recognize the important things, right? Like I wouldn't conflate the idea of passion and maturity, you know, like I think you're beyond that stuff at this point.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. You know, maybe it's funny. Cause I actually just had an old colleague hit me up about, oh, this is so funny. They worked for an agency when I worked in house and, they were taking over a chunk of our work from the in-house team, right? At another company.
Oh, no.
And my manager at the time lost it. Like he was just so confrontational with them and like so hostile and like, and you know, full this, you know, in their defense, like our CEO didn't give us any heads up. It's just like literally like one day we get an email with like, hey, can you hand over all of the, you know, the social media handles and passcodes to this agency, they're going to be taking it over now. And and it was funny because, you know, at the time, like I remember being passionate about it, you know. I wasn't too upset, but my boss was really upset. And I remember thinking, oh, this really matters, you know, and like, this is a failure that we didn't do this. And it's like, no, they just hired a professional who's like, probably going to do this really well, and that's fine. And now we can focus on
a little bit of load off of you.
Yeah, it's just a different perspective.
Did anyone get laid off as a result?
No. No.
Who cares then?
Yeah.
Fucking take it. Have fun. Exactly. Run with it. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh man.
So you were gonna say something about Milo.
Oh, Milo turned one.
Hey. Happy birthday, little guy.
Oh dude, man.
How did that happen so fast?
Dude, it flew by. It flew
Good
by.
Grief. When is his birthday again?
I'm not going to say it on the podcast. I'll let you know offline.
Oh, my bad.
It's okay. Yeah. It was last week.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I tried to be discreet about it in my posting too.
I should have thought through that.
No, you're fine.
Wow, that's wild, man. I can't believe it's flown by so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, it flew by. We had our 1 year checkup today. And it, again, shout out Dr. Lee at Kaiser. The difference in attitude of like the second kid versus the first kid. Like I remember, I remember just all, like I would have a notes app like thing just filled out with like, sometimes his poop looks like this. Sometimes there's, you know, and when he does this, he makes this noise and is this normal and his eyes do this sometimes. And then with Milo, I'm like, hey, look, look at him. Hey, isn't he cool?
He's good, right?
He's good, right? We're good here. She's like, he's awesome. I'm like, great. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Yeah, dude. And then, other than that, training is starting to click. I felt like I was inconsistent a few weeks ago, you know, and now I just feel like I'm finding my rhythm and, everything is feeling,
you feel good, man.
Feeling good. Thanks. Feel good
when we roll.
Yeah. Likewise. Man. Yeah. Likewise. Dude, I've noticed a difference, no offense, but like, I mean, this in the best way, since you started tallying submissions instead of tallying sweeps or whatever you were tallying before, my life's gotten harder, you know? You give up. I don't want to say that you give up less because that insinuates that you were giving something up before, but I'll commend you that the blade is getting sharp these days.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I will tell you right now that I am sitting at, let me pull this up here because I know everyone's anxious to hear my stats right now. All right, ready for this? For the year so far, I have collected 171 submissions and got tapped 34 times. And I had zero today. Wow. I get zero and zero today. Today's the first time all year it was a zero and zero day.
Okay, I got to ask, and I'm sorry, guys, we'll get into the meat and potatoes of this podcast here in a second. But so how do you address when you're rolling with lower belts when you're talking about those submissions?
I'm counting it. And really? Then the reason I had to think about this, right? And the reason I count those is because I previously would just roll to find position.
Yeah.
But now I'm rolling to find submission and I'm doing it as smooth as possible. I want to be as intentional and smooth as possible. So I'm actually putting myself in bad situations with like a white belt or blue belt, or even some purple belts, putting myself in bad situations. And I'm just finding ways to smoothly get there to that submission. And so in some cases, it's actually a little bit harder, right? Like I could go in and try and wreck shop, but like, I think I mentioned this before, that doesn't make either of us better. Right. And so maybe I'll go in and say, all right, today I'm only going to hunt for triangles on this white belt or blue belt or purple belt.
Man, I'd love to see you triangle somebody.
Oh man, you and me both, bro.
I don't think I've ever seen you triangle somebody.
I can probably count those from 2023 and 2024 on one hand. There's a few, but I can probably count a year and a couple months on one hand.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, that, and I figured if I do it that way and make it a little bit more challenging for myself, it's okay to count.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with warm up rolls, right? Like if someone catches me in a warm up roll, whatever. Okay. Tally it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Keeps you honest.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So, that's kind of what things going for me on my training right now.
Nice, dude.
I
guess this kind of flows right into, you know, kind of what you're saying, going into training with an agenda. But, this week we're talking about behavior. Specifically, we're talking about bad behavior, bad behavior in jiu-jitsu, bad behavior, in our kids, or what we call bad behavior. And I think we'll talk a little bit more about how we define that as we get into that. But first, I think let's tee this up by talking a little bit about like, what is bad behavior in the training room on the mats? What do you think?
You know, I think when I think about bad behavior in the gym, it's really doing not matching your partner's energy, right? Like if I'm going super hard and you're laying down like a dead fish, one of us is not matching the other person's energy. And vice versa, if you're going super hard on me and I'm being a dead fish, one of us is not matching. I'm not saying one person is right, one person's wrong, right? In that case, actually probably both people are wrong. But like if I'm just kind of going like a nice, easy pace and you're coming at me with like the kitchen sink, dude, that's not great training behavior. And by the way, you don't do this. I'm just using that as an example. Yeah, yeah. But you know, I think that is almost like when you do that and you don't match a person's energy and you're going too aggro, you're almost coming off as a mat, not even almost, you are being a mat bully. Right. And so, one of my biggest pet peeves, when I see it as an instructor and when I have a training partner that does this, is that they lay there like a dead fish when you're trying to drill something.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, you know, that's really, I understand why. And usually it's a situation of ignorance, right? No, people aren't typically behaving like dead fish because they don't care. It's usually because they don't know how to drill properly. Yeah. So I try and give the benefit of the doubt, but you know, it's still not the best training partner behavior, right? Like you want to give enough resistance without fighting the position, but so that your partner has enough feedback, physical feedback on what they're trying to do, right?
Yeah.
So,
not to cut you off, but like, when we first talked about this, and I still think about this, like there are things that you learn, there are things that you might have to work to change, and there are things that are just like a non-starter, and like the things that you learn hopefully is how to be a good partner. And like we'll get into what being a good partner is, but a lot of that, I think it's a good point, is like matching energy. You know, it's like and sometimes that's, you know, if one person really wants to work and the other person's just kind of like chatty and like having fun, it's like I think you have to, it's your responsibility to raise yourself to the level of the person who's acting more serious.
Yeah.
And like,
absolutely.
You know, we're here to get better. And
you should have fun, but it's, you know, it shouldn't be a one-sided thing, right?
Yeah. Like, particularly if the person's really trying to work, like, you know, if you want to chat, that's fine. You should find ways to chat about the technique that you're working on, you know? But yeah, that's my point of view.
You know what I'll say is the worst mat behavior that you could have is coming in with shitty hygiene. That to me is like because that's something you can control, to your earlier point, right? You can control what your nails look like. You can control how bad your gi smells or your rash guard smells. You can control the fact that you did or did not take a shower after training. These are all things that you don't need someone to teach. You shouldn't need someone to teach you unless you're a child and you're in a kids class, and that's okay, right? But as an adult, I mean, I say it in the announcements now, but I almost don't want to have to, right? Like, I'm talking to a group of adults, guys, wash up, you know, like, because the reality is the gym can do everything they can to stay clean. One person comes with staph or ringworm is in the gym now, right? Like,
yeah, it's such a good example of community, right? Like, about your personal responsibility, but how personal responsibility affects the broader community. And it's so silly that it's something like hygiene, and specifically Uday isn't just talking about, like, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but like, just talking about like a guy who's like smelly, right? Like, you're talking about people who what is common in combat sports, what is common in contact sports, is, you know, skin infections and stuff that gets, you know, ringworm, staph, etc. And especially people who have kids, are leaving the mats, are coming to the mats, doing their part, showing up clean. Somebody else who doesn't have that same, quite literally, skin in the game, is not. And they're not thinking, or they're like, oh, it's fine, I'll just cover this up or whatever it is, and I'll just live to train another day. Yeah. And then that person who has a kid goes home 3 days later, a week later, they've got something on their skin. And now they're a handicapped, and pardon the term handicapped, because I know it has a bigger implication for people who have disabilities, but you know, you have a player that can't play to the degree that their other player can play, right? Like, crap, I have to make sure that I'm wearing something to cover this up every time I pick up the kid, or like
100%.
I can't cuddle on the couch without thinking about this getting all over the couch. We got to wash our sheets more. We got to do, it's such a pain in the ass. And like to have something on your skin that's inconveniencing you, and to not think that you're going to carry that forward and inconvenience your community because you want to train through it. It's fucking selfish.
Which is like, it's like the people have that like tough guy mentality. Like, oh, I'm just going to train through it. No, man, like you said, you're being selfish, right? Like we had a training partner recently who's like, who came to Gorilla Den and was ready to train. He's like, hey, I'm in. And then as soon as they got there, they're like, showed up in jeans. I was like, what's going on, dude? I was like, I can't, man. Take a look at this. And he had a little something on him, right? And so, man, I'm so appreciative that he did that because, you know, if he didn't, we probably would have trained, right? One of us would have got it. Multiple of us would have got it. And how many people come here who have kids, right? And like, it would have thrown everybody for a loop. And so I'm very appreciative of the fact that that we do have a community that looks out for each other like that.
Yeah, I want to commend you really quick. I don't know if you know this. On Tuesday night, I think it was, you teach no-gi on Tuesday?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Owen and I popped in for a minute. We got Asayi next door. And Tommy said, what's up? And I think Ben was also teaching with you. And you were so locked in. It was awesome to see you teach. I'd never seen you teach kids before. And you corrected someone's behavior in a way that was like so great. So there was two people grappling. How old are the people in the class?
From like 6 to 10, 11.
6 to 10 and 11. Okay. I'm only mentioning their genders because it will help you identify them, but they're about the same size, probably the same ability. And they were doing some sort of wrestling. And the boy had the girl in a headlock, like a bully headlock where you're giving somebody a noogie. And he was attempting to almost like try an uchi or a hip toss. And he was like wrestling her to the ground. And you intervened really quickly and you're like, hey, just a heads up, like the technique that you're doing right now, like that's not a thing. Like that's not like a real technique. You know, there's no reason to do that. And like the way you talked to him was like not like it made it safe for everybody. And it also let him know that like what he was doing wasn't exactly jujitsu and that there's a way to do that that is jujitsu and safe. And what he's doing right now is just not going to get him there. Like, it was like, you were like almost helping him out by correcting him. Yeah. And it wasn't in a way that like,
he's like, sorry, professor. I didn't know. I was like, no, I know you didn't know. And that's why I'm telling you, don't worry about it. Just, you know, be mindful of it. Right. Especially because he's a bigger, stronger boy than the girl was. Right. And so, you know, I care about these kids, you know. I don't want to see anybody get hurt, and I want to see them continue to progress. And so, man, thank you. I didn't even know you were in there that day.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
It was such a quick moment too, and you handled it so well as an instructor. Again, it's a situation where like that could have been bad behavior, right? But it was more just ignorance and somebody getting caught up in the moment. And I mean, it's a kid, right? So, and like as adults, we see that happen a lot, you know, with people who just don't know any better. And how do you approach it? But anyways, so. Like I said, the things that I break down are things that you learn, which are like being a good partner and hygiene. Fucking drilled that one in tonight. I mean, sorry, it's close to the hygiene, bone these days.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, even with hygiene, I was going to say, now that I think a little bit more critically about this, and as we're talking about it, I remember back to a time when I was a white belt and I had the stinky gi. And I, you know, I thought I was cleaning it correctly, but I know this is going to be hard to take, Blake. I too was once ignorant. And I just didn't know how to wash it properly. I thought I could just throw it in with my clothes and just wash it, right? Like, no, man, like I learned quickly thereafter, like, no, it's a whole process, right? Like how you wash it, how much OxiClean you use OxiClean, ladies and gentlemen. It helps with the geese. How you dry it, right? Like all of it matters. And so, and then how you say goodbye to the gi, because at some point a gi is like done, You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's been through the ringer. It's time to say goodbye to it. And so when does that happen? Right. And so, like, I think I learned that through my journey as well. So, you know, yeah,
I guess something that people don't really they don't tell you a lot about. And like, when you buy a ghee, it says machine wash, tumble dry, you know? And I think you develop a style of how you to care for your ghees. And like, that to me becomes almost a ritual that I enjoy. That's a part of it. Right. Yeah. Like, now, you know, and I think a lot of people have different processes or different ways that they wash their shit. And it's like the first time you get complimented on how nice your ghee smells.
Yeah. Oh,
bro.
Oh, dude, your ghee game is tight. Not only do you come with the best looking ghees, your ghees, the white ghees, look white.
Hey.
There's no gray in them. They look crisp out the bag, dude.
Yeah, there's
a process, huh?
Yeah, you take care of your geese. I've had a lot of gray geese before, dude. I've had a lot of gray, yellow, gnarly white geese. Yeah. But all right. So then the next category to me is like the things that you have to work to change. So to me, like, bad behavior is bad behavior can be. Like, my biggest jiu-jitsu pet peeve, and I've talked about this before, is like people who interrupt the instructor. And like that's the guy whose name is on the fucking door. Like, that's the guy who I'm paying to hear talk, not you. And there are times when it's appropriate and there are times when it's actually helpful. But the vast majority of the time, chiming in and being like, well, what if this happens? Or what if you do this, is not helpful. There are times when it is helpful. And if you have that kind of rapport with your professor and it's like that kind of class, that's totally cool. Or if the professor asks, are there any questions, and like, that's an appropriate time for it. But if you think, whatever, if you start trying to teach the class, irritates the crap out of me. And those are things that you might have to work to change, right? You might be the kind of person like me, who's a talker, and you're just not used to being in a situation where you're like, hey man, nobody here fucking cares about what you have to say.
Do you know, do you know what I am starting to enjoy that I would typically think would annoy the shit out of me is the questions I get from the kids class. All the questions start with why. And like, when someone asks me why I'm doing something the way I do, like, my knee jerk reaction is to be like, just because this is the way I said to do it, right? But they'll be like, when you do the Kimura, why is it important to put the elbow on the shoulder? Like, that's a great question. They're trying to understand the context. And I love those kind of questions versus what you called out, like, what if, right? Like, what if? Well, okay, what if this is a game of chess, right? Like, there's an answer to everything. But when you ask why, now you're really trying to understand the context and what is the physics that makes this move work. Yeah. And when you understand that, you're opening up the game so much more for yourself, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good, like, a good thing. So these are also, like, very obviously analogous to behaviors in other parts of life, right?
Of course,
and so, like, you think about the guy in the meeting, right? And the guy in the meeting who keeps interrupting, or the guy in the meeting who keeps asking, well, what if, what if, what if, versus the guy who asks, like why, you know, like, oh, like, how could we do this? You know, the why is that that we do this way? And like, sometimes actually either of those questions can be helpful, but it's really about context, I think. Yes. And I think it's about context, and I think it's about contention.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
There is an author that I detest, and he has a book called Start With Why. And his name is Simon Sinek. And you may have seen his shit all over social media. For those of you who are listening, he's the guy that posted like this, like, rant about millennials. And like, he always has like, his thing is like, he has back of the napkin psychology. And it's so frustrating to listen to, like, from my perspective, at least, because like, everything he says has huge, like, holes that you can pop in it. And, but I digress. He did write a book with that called Start With Why. And it really challenges people to, when you're like in parenting situations, or when you're in at work, right? Or when you're like leading marketing campaigns, like, start with why. And that makes sense to me, despite his all his other back of the napkin bullshit. This this kind of resonated.
Yeah. And then
do you know him? Do you know what I'm talking about?
And then my last category is the things that are a non-starter. And things that are a non-starter are just things that are just generally unsafe, right? It's making people feel uncomfortable. It's after you know that that's not appropriate, you know, it's making people who are being a bully, et cetera. And those are the things that are like, hey, these might be more character things. And those are things that are not going to, you know, there's this idea that people have that like, oh, jujitsu makes everybody better people. And I agree to that to some degree, but sometimes jujitsu, if you're, if you're just an asshole, jujitsu makes you an asshole who can do jujitsu. And, you know, it's not the case with everybody. I think it does. I think, you know, the river softens all stones in some ways, but you know,
fuck your poetry. Jesus.
Sorry, dude.
No, that's great.
But I think there are just some instances with people where you're like, nah, man, this isn't for you. You're just fucking being a dick and that's not appropriate here.
No, I agree. I mean, they're it's like handing a weapon to a child, right? It's like, dude, you're not ready for this. You're not ready for that emotionally. You're not mature enough for this thing that we get to do, right? Yeah. And you're right. I think some degrees it does make people, it can make you a better person because it adds that level of humility to you, right? And when you're a little bit more humble person, you tend to see things with a different lens. But, you know, I agree. I think there's those non-starters.
And, you know, back to fatherhood, or we can start talking about fatherhood here, is that like, it's funny because I think that in parenting, in jujitsu at this point, like I'm very comfortable with these sort of gradients with the like, you'll learn this. You'll pick this up. This is an easily teachable moment. Versus parenting, I think it often feels like such a binary, like your kid's acting good or your kid's acting bad. And it's hard to see that gray area of like, this is play or he's just hungry and it's 5:30 and we were supposed to eat dinner 20 minutes ago. And, you know, like all of that kind of stuff that you, the nuance that you understand, that I understand now looking at like jujitsu. So yeah, I guess, you know, in parenting, like it's a little bit, it's just, it feels a little bit, I have a different relationship with bad behavior. Yeah. I don't know.
So what do you mean by that?
I think that in jujitsu, it's almost like I feel like bad behavior of someone else doesn't reflect on me as a parent. I mean, it doesn't reflect on me as a practitioner of jujitsu. Yeah. I'm more tolerable. Whereas when my kid acts up, I see it as a failure on my part. I'm not saying I always do, but I'm saying there's a tendency to see their bad behavior as a failure on your part. And then of course your reaction to the bad behavior is another opportunity for more failure. And so it becomes a little bit more intense. I guess it's because there's just more ownership there of what they're doing.
Yeah. I think, I mean, it's our jobs as parents to monitor and regulate that bad behavior, where it's not necessarily our job. I mean, I guess it kind of is to a certain degree as black belts to monitor and regulate bad behavior in the gym, right? Like to a certain degree, it is our responsibility, but I'm not gonna like, you know, react the same way if I see like, you know, like I talk about in episode one, Milena stomping on some kid's bag, right? Like, you know, way back when we chatted about that, but like, so I think we do have a responsibility, but it's a different level of responsibility and it's a different level of investment.
Do you have do you have some examples of meltdowns or bad behavior in your kids and how you've handled it? If you feel comfortable talking about some of that stuff.
I do. So, man, actually, I mentioned to you I was going to be a little bit late tonight. And, dude, you know, Milena got her report card today. And it was a this is a decent report card. She did well. She, especially considering she's in dual immersion where everything is being taught in Spanish and she doesn't speak Spanish as her native tongue. So actually, she had like a solid B plus report card, maybe B, solid B report card. I mean, they don't give like letters at this age, right? Like it's a little bit different. But if I had to kind of zoom out, I'd call it like a B report card. And there are two kind of major pieces of feedback that the teacher had for her. And both are totally correctable. And Milena just really, really lost it. And she, you know, started saying things that really broke my heart. Like, you know, one of the pieces of feedback that the teacher gave her was like, hey, you know, sometimes she doesn't focus in class and I need her to pay attention. She's like, serves as a distraction to herself and others. You know, I expect nothing less from my child, right? Yeah, like, very, I get very that, relatable, right? Like, yeah. And so, you know, I told her that and she's like, I don't know how to be a good listener. I don't know how to, and I'm like, baby, of course you, that broke my heart. To hear my daughter think she doesn't know how to do this thing that I know she does, you know, it's like, this is a thing that, I don't know, just, it's just hard to hear her think that way of herself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, I wouldn't necessarily call it bad behavior, but it was definitely a challenge talking her kind of off the cliff on this stuff, right? Like, hey, it's not that big of a deal. And you know, I'm trying to like juggle two parts of me, right? Like number one is like, hey, you know, I really need you to focus on these areas of improvement, right? Nobody's perfect. I don't expect you to be perfect, but these are two things I think you can do and I think you can do well. While also balancing that with like not trying to put too much pressure on her, right? Because she's eight. And like, okay, like, yeah, you're 8 year old who wants to chit chat with the person sitting next to you in class. You're eight. The 8 year olds do that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had a parent-teacher conference the other day before we got her report card. And one of the things she told me is like, the teacher's like, oh, Milena always has something in her desk that she's playing with in her hands while she's learning. And I told the teacher, I was like, so what? I have something in my hands right now.
Yeah.
I'm in meetings. I'm in job interviews. And in order to focus, I have something in my hands. I'm a kinesthetic learner, right? You and I have talked about this, right? Like how I always kind of have to fidget to have something in my hands. Like, I learn by doing and my hands are always kind of active. And I told her, I'm like, that's how I learn. And that's probably how she's learning. And so maybe is there something we can give her to fidget with as she learns, right? Like, you know, so
I mean, my kids, for context, like, you know, my kids go to a very, very hippie preschool and like, and part of the thing that they encourage there is like a lot of kids need, like what they call stimming. So it's like, it's a form of stimulation. Right. And the teachers at my school help accommodate that because they're like, hey, look, like the kids will sit down to have snack. And kids will be like, why are you kicking me? Like, why is this kid keep kicking me? And the teacher will get up and be like, hey, you know, Owen, can you stop kicking so-and-so? And they're like, the kid can't control it because it's just a behavior that they need to do in order to sit still. They need some kind of stimulation. And so our school like does these little things where they're like, oh, cool. Like we got these big rubber bands and we put them around the edge of the chair. And if the kid wants to kick something, they can kick the rubber band. It's like a cool sensation. And it's like, oh, cool. Suddenly all these kids are able to sit at this desk and not kick the crap out of each other, you know? And it's like, and again, you're dealing with I'm talking about preschoolers, right? Like,
no, that's really cool though. I mean, it gives them something else to focus on still being able to take in the information.
And like, our preschool teacher is very like, whatever. She's very into people who, she's very into thinking about like a full spectrum of opportunities for people. Right. And recognizing that some kids I don't know. We tend to think of like kids in these like very narrow, like, oh, you're a kinesthetic learner or you're a visual learner or you're an audio learner or whatever it is. Yeah. And it's like, hey man, it's a bit more gray. Sometimes kids are this, sometimes kids are that. And then sometimes like kids need something to fidget with. Right. Like it just makes sense, you know? And again, like it'd be different if she was getting C minuses.
No. Yeah, totally. She's doing well. And like, I try to reiterate that to her today too. Tonight I was like, you know, you're doing great. He's considering everything, especially considering you don't speak Spanish natively, right? Like you are having conversations with people and I have no idea what you're saying because you've outpaced me now in Spanish and you're 8.
Yeah.
And this is awesome, right? Like, and I reminded her too. I was like, I know you know how to listen in class because when I teach and you come to my jiu-jitsu class, you're super respectful. And I think all your teacher is looking for is that same type of behavior, right?
Yeah.
Like where you focus on the task at hand. That said, I will say I'm looking at my notes from when we did this episode back in Halloween.
Uh-huh.
And also your note about the kicking reminded me. Lately, and by the way, I don't mean to be totally bagging on Milena right now. She's an awesome kid and I love her to death. And she's also starting to get into this phase where she's like hitting me.
Yeah.
It started kind of playful. And now it's kind of turning playful, but when she's upset, and like even tonight when I was talking to her about this stuff, I was like holding her, like cuddling her because she was getting upset and she kind of elbowed me.
Yeah.
And Van got mad at her for that. And at one point, you know, when we were filming this, when we initially filmed this during recorded this during Halloween, it started coming up and me and Van were like, maybe we should cancel Halloween. But then that kind of punishes everyone, right? That punishes Shia. It punishes the giant kid that I am, right? Punishes Van, who's worked – all of us have worked hard on these costumes. And so it's not really fair to everybody. And so, you know, we wanted to do something that was timely and relevant. And so I don't know if I've talked about this idea that we started doing on this podcast before or if it was just on this episode we previously recorded. But one of the things that we do is it's like – it's a positive reinforcement reward. And what it is, it's every time they do something that we really, really like and they've earned it, we give them a dollar and we put that dollar on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
And so like if Milena, like on her own accord, goes and washes dishes, folds the laundry, or just does something really, really sweet for her sister, right? Hey, you know what, kiddo? That was awesome. I'm proud of you for that. I'm putting a dollar on the board.
Yeah.
Conversely, if she elbows me in the face as we're talking about her grades, I'm taking a dollar away. You know better than that. You're not supposed to use you're not supposed to use your body to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
Right? Like you shouldn't be doing that. So it seems to have been helping. It seems to really just like they get excited about it. And then that dollar, they collect it and when we go to Target, Pop, I have $23 saved up. Can I get this? Yeah, dude, it's your money. And then you know, they start to learn a bit more about the value of a dollar, right? Like, why can't I get this and that? Well, you're going to be $4 short and there's tax and, you know, like, so.
Yeah. I think that.
What about you, man?
Well, one, like, I think the hitting thing is like, there are like many cycles of that. And
yeah,
with Owen's, like at Owen's age right now, it's like, it was a big thing. Not like he does it a ton, but he does it sometimes. Yeah. And it's more to do with like my teacher, just like his teacher called it out. She's like, look, these kids are going to do this. They're experimenting with stuff. Yeah. They have these overwhelming feelings in their body and they don't know where to put it. And, and you know, think about like trying to control them with a bowl of candy sitting in front of them. Right. Like, they're going to eat the candy and like, it doesn't matter how much they know they're not supposed to eat the candy. They're going to fucking eat the candy. And like hitting is a very similar thing where it's like, they know they're not supposed to hit, but everything in their body is like overwhelming them to the point where it's like, hey, I got to get this out of me. And so we try and create a safe environment. Doesn't always work. work. And I'm like, you know, I've got a grappling dummy in the garage. We've got pillows. It's like, hey buddy, very simple. Daniel Tiger, you know, do you want to stomp your feet and hit a pillow?
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. And sometimes, you know, kids hit. And a lot of it is what they're exposed to in the media doesn't really show them like pain. And they don't understand that the result of their action isn't just them literally exercising this intense emotion they're having, but the person who is receiving it is experiencing pain. That doesn't click. They don't, it's too much for them to get.
Can I tell you that what you just said is super freaking timely in our house?
I hope
because something else recently happened with sweet little Shia.
Yeah.
And the other day, you know, they have like this, like, they have like some Star Wars action figures who have like guns. And she picked up the gun and pointed at Milena and goes, pew, pew, I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to shoot you. And Milena was like, really like sad about this. Like, what? Like, why would you say that? You know, that's not a joke. That's not funny. Like,
yeah.
And she came in running to us and I kind of got upset at Shia and I was like, hey, you know, you don't understand what, you know, why that hurts your sister's feelings. Let me explain it to you. And it's because exactly what you just said. And Van told me the same thing. She's like, it's because she doesn't understand the implications of what that means. Like what kind of harm that could cause someone if she did that. Right. Like, so.
And it is, it is almost to a degree that is beyond her comprehension, because it is almost to a degree that it is beyond human comprehension. Right. Like
totally,
you know, like it's like, one, you're like, okay, how do I explain this to her? And then you start to pull that string and the whole sweater unravels when you get down there. Cause it's like even Owen, man, he's asking questions about, is like, we're watching a show. Somebody gets hurt. Oh, are they dead? Did they die? What happens when they die? What happened to the dinosaurs? The dinosaurs turned to skeletons. Can skeletons move? What's the deal with skeletons? And you're like, oh fuck. we're deep down in it now. You know what I mean? And you're like, yeah, you know what, dude? It's hard to understand because it's hard to understand. I don't know. Yeah. Parents, good luck with that one. But anyways, with us, with bad behavior, you know, like I said, a lot of it is just them. One, and our teacher said this, man, I cannot praise teacher Kate enough on this podcast, but Kate has said that, like, especially because a lot of, if you have young kids, you'll see a lot of weird shit start happening when they come home from preschool. When they come home from preschool, suddenly there are all these behaviors that they're learning from these other kids. And what's happening is at preschool, they're observing all of this stuff and maybe experimenting a little bit. But when they get home, they feel safe with you. And so they feel safe to really experiment with some of the stuff that they see out there because you're their safe space. And so you might get an extreme version of what they were exposed to at school. And you're like, where is this coming from, dude? Like, you never did this before. And it's like, well, he's testing it out because he saw it somewhere. And what you should, one thing you should feel as a parent is a little bit of comfort that they're comfortable with you, that you're their safe space where they feel like they can hash some of this stuff out. Still super frustrating. Still like really like, oh my God. But to understand like that's what's happening sometimes makes it a little bit easier.
Man, that's a great point. That's a great point that they take it out on us because they feel safe to do so.
Yes.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. That's a great perspective, man.
Also, and I'll say this to everybody, you don't want to raise a turd. You know, you don't want your kids to suck. So there's certain things where you're like, you know, sometimes you do have to be the enforcer, and and by enforcer, you know, I obviously don't mean like a mad enforcer. I mean, you have to be someone who is, you have to be someone who is authoritative. If you say no to the candy because they had candy and they, you know, as an adult, they should not have any more candy, stand your fucking ground and like deal with the tantrum. That's okay. Because
it's again, job, right?
Yes. Yes. And like sometimes another really important thing that we do is create the boundaries that they need and they trust, right? So like they need to know, even though they're pushing you, if there's comfort in knowing that that thing is like is stable. So even if it's a no, make it a, and it's uncomfortable and your kid's yelling at you, go ahead and make it a firm no sometimes, because it needs to be. They need to know that there's a structure.
And also, like, as you have that temper tantrum and maybe have it again the second time and the third time, but eventually it just becomes, okay, I get it. That makes sense. No candy. It's past 8:30, right? Or whatever. I already had a piece of candy earlier. I get it. Right? Like the tantrums go away.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you've set those guardrails, at least. Once you've set those guardrails.
Yeah. And I think it's easy to forget that the kids are kids.
Yeah.
And they're just kids.
Oh my God, it is.
Yeah.
It is hard. It is easy to forget that, dude.
Yeah.
I was watching her cry today. I was like, but why are you crying? This is good stuff, kiddo. And I had to remind myself, dude, she's 8 and she's a perfectionist. And yeah. So anything that doesn't seem perfect is like, here we go.
It's crazy, so, dude. Yeah. Yeah. Even with Owen, he's going to be 4. And we expect so much from him when he interacts with his brother or something, or, you know, even his brother, like, who just turned 1, like, there's certain things that, like, we're like, why doesn't he figure that out yet? I'm like, oh my God, he's 1, dude.
Yeah.
He like, his, he doesn't know.
His brain is 1 year old. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he has 1 year of life experience.
Yeah. Oh man. Anyways. That was good. That section of the podcast was good. We'll give it a grappling with fatherhood award later on. That was.
I hope I don't get too much hate mail for about my Simon Sinek opinions.
Oh man, soft transition here. This week we do have a question from a listener, which was good. Brian B reached out and he just had his 1, 2, 3, 4th baby,
4th kiddo.
Fourth
kid. That's insane. Congratulations, dude.
And
way to go, man.
Let me give you guys context. Ryan, well, let me give you his question first, and then I'll give you more context. His question is, how much time did you take off of training after your baby was born? Which is a great question, totally relatable. Also, Brian, with 3 kids, is training like 5 times it is. He trains once at night. He goes to a night class, and then 4 times throughout the week, he is either an instructor at his academy. And so then he has the opportunity to train, or he goes to like a 6:30 a.m. class. So I just want to commend Brian off the bat for with way 3 go, kids training 5 times a week. Dude, you're a beast. Yeah. And I'm sure that you're going to figure this out way better than we will. But we'll go ahead and weigh in and give you our 2 cents.
Most definitely. You know, when Milena was born, I actually just started a new job and I didn't take any paternity leave. And that was a big mistake. When Shia was born, I took the full 6 weeks and I'm glad I did. And as far as like my jiu-jitsu time, right, which I'm sure is what you're actually asking. You know, I always live close enough to, I've always lived within striking distance of my academy, right? Like, the first academy I trained at, I was like a 4-minute walk away from. And so my current academy, I'm like a 5-minute bike ride from. And when Milena was born, I was mostly training probably about 5 or 6 times a week most of the time. Actually, I take that back. You know, it was about 5 or 6 months of mostly 6 a.m. classes, 1 to 2 times a week. And then Saturday and Sunday when I was able to get it in, right? So 6 a.m. classes, you know, get in there early, come home when things are really starting to bubble up. And then on the weekends when it made sense and when I was able to, and when the girls were, when Van and Milena were doing okay. With Shia, you know, I took the full 6 weeks of paternity leave, and almost as soon as paternity leave happened or ended, the pandemic hit. And so during paternity leave, I mean, I've said this before on the podcast, I'll say it again. I've been very fortunate to have had my in-laws, they moved in with us right before Shia was born. And so if I needed to sneak away for an hour, hour and a half to go train, I could tap them in, and then they'd, you know, usually be during her nap time. And then I'd come back and I'd take over. And then the pandemic hit. And so I was able to bring people over to train, right? Like I had my kind of little pod that came over to train with me. And after that, you know, it was just about being, and it sounds like Brian's right doing this, but just being really intentional about scheduling together and scheduling alongside Van and, you know, being mindful of the fact that I had a very demanding job from a time suck perspective, right? Like how do I kind of juggle these 3 things that are important to me? My family, my kids, right? My family, my kids, my training and my job, right? To a significantly lesser degree than my family. But my job was also a priority because that's what allowed me to pay our mortgage, put food on the table, right? And so I had to find a way to juggle those three things. And at one point, I was struggling at one of them, and the others suffered as well, right? I was struggling to find time to train significantly. And as a result, my performance at work was struggling. My relationship at home was starting to struggle. And so I really had to be hyper intentional about when I was going to train and commit to that, and how I was going to be a present father and a present husband and commit to that. And as you've mentioned before, Blake, is don't pay twice, right? Like, that idea hadn't been in my head. That statement hadn't been in my head, but that idea had been, right? Like, yeah. If I'm going to be in jiu-jitsu, I need to be focused here so that I can be my best version in those other two places that I'm needed. And so, this is a very long-winded way of saying it required me to be very intentional after each of my children were born about how I split up my time amongst my priorities. And if something else became a priority, how do I factor that in here as well, right? At one point, I'm going to have a job. You got a job during this situation, right? And we're going to want to continue to do this podcast. I'm having so much fun doing this. I know you are too.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Now it's four things that are a priority to me, right? Yeah. Like, how do I fit in this podcast, right? And so just continue to ever evolve. And so that's my long-winded answer. What about you, dude?
Yeah. So so with Owen, we had Owen and I, or Uday and I had kids right around the same time. His second happened right around the same time as my first, March 2020. And so with Owen, we had Owen, and I was running a business at the time, not very well. And things were really slow for us. And so things were slow. I was really stressed out and trying to make business happen. So I kind of just worked immediately after. Like, because I was working from home anyways. So it was just, I just transitioned into like, well, this is it. That was largely due to the fact that I couldn't go to jiu-jitsu. My gym was in San Francisco. I was living in Berkeley. There was a gnarly crackdown in San Francisco. My gym actually got reported for staying open underneath COVID restrictions, and they had to close down. I mean, it's great. They had a proper guy walk in there with a clipboard and, hey, you know, if we come in here again, you're getting fined. And, you know, and again, like, we'll remain apolitical on that. But I didn't have a training situation that was easy at all. And then it wasn't until probably months into the pandemic that I finally figured out a training situation. And that was like once a week with my training partner. And then occasionally it would be like once every 3 weeks. And I was like, fuck, man, this sucks. And so with Owen, I ended up taking just a massive pandemic break. You know, there's a lot of, you know, pandemic purple belts, right? Like, guys who got had their purple belt just had like pandemic years in there, right? Where it's just like, okay, I guess it's like this didn't, you know, it's like this year didn't happen in my training. It's like I took a whole year off. But with Milo, Becca had him. Becca went into labor on our drive to the hospital. We had him within an hour of us walking into the hospital. So from us walking into the door to us having a baby in our hand was an hour. We stayed one night. We left the next day, I think, we stayed one night in the hospital, and we left the next night pretty much. Yeah. And that next day I was at jiu-jitsu. And I was at jiu-jitsu with the head OBGYN at the hospital where we delivered my son.
That's right. That's Dr. right. He trains. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was training four times a week. Again, you know, Brian, I think it might be helpful to set, you know, what I do is I set mandatory minimums. I say, absolute minimum, I need to train this much, get this many rounds in. And for context for you, Brian, who's already getting after it so much, my mandatory minimums are 3 days and 20 rounds a week. So 3 days a week, 20 rounds of training, right?
you can't get worse. You cannot get worse if you show up to the gym 3 times a week and you get 20 rounds of training in a week. Cannot get worse. You'll you will probably get better.
Stay the same. You'll at least coast, right? But like you said, you'll probably get better.
And when you do that, you'll realize, oh, I can fit a fourth day in. Oh, I can get it. I can get another 5 rounds in here, and you'll start to pick it up. But once it's what people do is they make it real binary, and they say, I'm either going to show up or I'm not going to show up. I'm either going to go as much as I can, or I'm going to go not at all. And the truth is, generally with jiu-jitsu, something is better than nothing. And so I would just, you know, I would set your minimums.
I'm guilty of that. Yeah. I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of being about it. Yeah.
So I'd set your minimums and then work up from there. I don't think you're going to have any problem, man. But I mean, 4 kids, shoot. And also I will say, back to Uday's point about scheduling with your co-parent, your partner, whatever it is, like Becca and I are real intentional about this stuff now. And I, again, got lucky. I have a garage gym situation too, where, you know, one or two nights a week I can have somebody over and we can train from 9:30 to 11 at night, or, you know, freaking 5:30 to 7 a.m. Or whatever it is. And again, it doesn't even have to be that much. It could be 45 minutes, you know. You'd be shocked at what you can get done with one other very talented person who's hungry, you know.
Dude, I'll also say this, man, and I can't believe these words are going to come out of my mouth, because I don't know if I would follow this advice, even though it's the right advice, is take the time if you need it. You know, hang out with your kids, hang out with the other three, because, you know, you probably know better than we do, because you have more kids than we do. Like, 4 is more than 3, right? And 3 is more than 2. And it just, it feels like it gets progressively more difficult with each kid. So, I mean, I imagine that your partner is going to need some support. Your kids are going to need some support. So if you need to take a couple weeks off from training to be at home, dude, do that. You know, like, it's jiu-jitsu is going to be there for you in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks when you go back, right? Like, these moments are precious, right? And so if you need to be there, then be there, man.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, jiu-jitsu will be there. Your kids' first 6 months won't be. And, you know, you probably know this way better than we do, which is why you keep having kids.
We should be asking him for advice, dude. Brian, give us advice.
All right. I hope that was helpful, Brian. And guys, and gals, if you have any questions that you want us to address, jiu-jitsu or parenting related, please, you can always drop us an email at grapplingwithfatherhoodpod@gmail.com. And we get to as many of them as we can on the podcast.
Yes, indeed.
Next up, we're going to talk about snacks. As we always snack do, attack, the snack baby. Attack portion. Snack attack. So this is a long overdue review.
Well overdue
review from this episode. Yeah. Our good friends Annie and Jose made a huge contribution, and they asked us to review snacks, and they got them for us, and they did not disappoint. Man, they were so good. But they were so lost. Good. They were in the lost episode, and I just feel terrible because it was a good contribution. It was good content. And so we got to talk about them now. So Uday, what were they?
So like you said, our dear friends, Annie and Jose, both black belts, they donated 3 bags of this stuff called turtle chips to us. And these turtle chips, it's like a, if you're a child of the 90s, you may remember the 3D Doritos. And they've since discontinued them, I think.
No way. But oh, 3D Doritos. Yeah.
The 3D Doritos, right? Like, there are these chips that are shaped kind of like turtles. So they're like airy and fluffy and crispy. And so like, you bite into it and like, it's just light and puffy. It's almost like if I don't know, how would you describe it? Like a pirate's booty and a Dorito had a love child.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not that you don't get, so when you have pirate's booty, you have this like dissolving texture in your mouth of like that popcorn it's thing. Not it's that. Not like that. It is like a shell almost, but it's like the inside is also textured, but it doesn't it's not hard to chew. It's easy, enjoyable to chew. It's crunchy, but it's not like a full Dorito chip crispy. Like a Dorito chip, it's somewhere between, I don't know, a Dorito and a corn chip. I don't know. It's really hard to explain the texture.
You don't feel like a piece of trash if you eat like an entire bag full.
Which is why they're dangerous. Like
super dangerous.
As soon as they hit your tongue, you're like, I could eat so many of these.
Yeah. And so they brought us three bags, three different flavors. And I have a power ranking of these flavors, Blake. I know you do as well, as does your family. And so I will share my power ranking first, but I'd love to also hear yours as well.
Let's go.
So I'm going to put in the number one seed for me of the three that we received were the Flame and Lime flavor turtle chips. And these had like this, just as it sounds, it had this little kick and a little hint of lime. Not quite as spicy as like a Flamin' Hot chip, but not mild by any means, right? Like had like a little kick to it, a little bit of that lime zing, if you will. So that's number one for me. Number two, and I'll say this, number one and two, close call, super close call. Number two was sweet corn for me. And the reason this is close call is because it's a really unique flavor. Something that I've never really tasted before, right? In like a chip. And so it had like, I really, really like sweet and salty mixtures, right? Like, and this had that. And so to me, that it was like a super tight call between one and two for that one.
Yeah.
And then number three for me was the truffle flavored one, which was also very unique. And it wasn't bad, but it was very strong and pungent, and that kind of truffle flavor was a bit much for me. Go ahead.
The thing with truffle is if they just brought you the bag of truffle chips, you'd be like, this is incredible. Like if that was it, if that was your only introduction to these turtle chips, that would easily be like,
oh, this is amazing.
Yeah. It would easily be the best. It is unfortunate.
The context heard it.
For the truffle chips. That it had to come in the context of the sweet corn and the Flame and Lime. So my ranking and our family ranking is very similar, except we went sweet corn at the top, Flame and Lime in the middle, and then we went truffle at the bottom. The sweet corn, if you've ever had a green corn tamale or like a sweet corn tamale, it tastes like that. Like it's savory and dessert, but like it doesn't taste so sweet that you're like, you feel like guilty about it. It's incredible. Yeah. And then, I mean, the Flame and Lime, exactly. Like if it wasn't really flaming, but it was just spicy enough to where you're like, I could eat so many of these. And then the truffle, again, the truffle is like it feels like, how do I explain it? Like the truffle is like owning a Corvette where it's like, but nobody drives that. Like it's everybody's like, that's a really nice car, you know, like it's a really nice car, but like, I can't take that to, you know, to drop the kids off. No, I'm going to take the freaking minivan. And so
that's
like
a great analogy. I was wondering where you were going with that. And I was like, that landed.
I hope so. Yeah. So it's like, it's undeniable how good it is, but it isn't the kind of thing that you could be like, oh, I'm just going to pick this up. I'm looking at their Wikipedia page, by the way. And they are they're a pretty small company, a $6.7 million company.
This might be our first non-Trader Joe's.
I know.
Food review. How's it feel, Trader Joe's? How's it feel? This is what happens when you don't sponsor us, bro.
Oh man, watch it. It's good. Like next week, it's going to be like, you know, Trader Turtles, and they're going to take them out. Yeah, it looks like they're everywhere, man.
I think Vietnam, you can get these at India. The Asian supermarkets is where you can find these.
Yeah. Looks like
that. So thank you, Annie. Thank you, Jose. You guys are the best.
Yeah.
And would you recommend these?
Highly recommend. I mean, highly. Like this would be like if you had, you know, if we would have done this like a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and you would have had these at your Super Bowl party, like this would they're legendary.
Killed. It would have. Yeah.
All right. On that note, let's talk about our sponsor.
Yes, sir.
We train jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is a sport that is very physically demanding. And as a result, we sweat a lot, and a lot of important fluids come out of our body in the way of sweat. I know, right? Sometimes water doesn't cut it, right? When you sweat out water, you also lose valuable electrolytes. Our sponsor, Fluid Tactical Electrolyte Mix, is an awesome solution for that. It is rapid hydration. Tactical is an electrolyte replacement mix that helps you hydrate better than anything else. It replaces minerals that are lost in sweat without excess sugar or any added junk. It is a must-have for firefighters, construction workers, solar farmers, people in the oil fields, or anyone who is working under hard heat and stress.
And, you know, guys, one of the great things about this is it helps eliminate cramps. You know, this stuff was designed by professionals using real science. Tactical is a no-nonsense way of preventing cramps and fighting dehydration during long, hot days on the job or long, hot training sessions.
Yeah. Well, what's really nice about it, too, is how convenient it is. It comes in small individual packets that you can just drop into a 16-ounce bottle of water or your own, whatever you bring to drink, water out of a jiu-jitsu, and you simply add in, one packet and shake it up and it instantly dissolves.
And all their ingredients are sourced right here in the US and inspected for purity right here. They're mixing and their packaging all takes place in the GMP inspected and approved facility right here in LA.
Yep.
Los Angeles, California.
And they're delicious. So they come in an assortment of five flavors, and you can pick one that you like, or you can grab a whole variety pack. They also have a zero sugar mix, which is also delicious if you're trying to cut weight. You can find them at livefluid.com or on Amazon. Just search for Fluid Tactical Electrolyte Drink Mix.
And we'll have a link right in the description of this podcast.
Yes, that's right.
Alongside BJJ Fanatics video, Nogi Essentials by yours truly, guys. Check it out if you haven't already. Learn all the techniques that I use. Learn kind of some of the old school tricks that I do, mixing with some of the new school fun ways of applying pressure and technique on your opponents. And check it out.
I was training with somebody last night in my garage, our buddy Casey, and he asked me about guillotine, darce, anaconda setups. And I said, you are asking the wrong guy, and there is a BJJ Fanatics that you need to check out. And I showed him like a handful of setups. I'm like, but man, you literally have the Picasso, a couple blocks away, and you're asking like, the sign painter. Guillotines, darces, anacondas, that system is such a critical part of modern jiu-jitsu. Attack the head to open up the legs, attack the legs to open up the head, it's such the back and forth is such a critical part of opening things up and keeping yourself moving, especially if you're getting into leg entanglements. You need to know how, you need an A to go to your B and C,
Totally.
And I think, and even if you can sink in that A, whew, boy, make that a real threat,
It's trouble. Yeah.
So, if you're looking to get into that piece of the game, I highly recommend, as someone who's been choked by Uday a lot.
Right on, man. Thank you.
Of course.
Well, we're at that part of the show where we talk a little bit about pop culture. What you got cooking, Blake?
Oh man. So I'm actually quite boring this week. I don't think I hate to say this, but I think we're just still watching Vanderpump Rules. Nice. I think we're still, I'm sorry. This is like, it's also Hulu? Because.
How are you watching it?
It's on, streaming on, not Hulu. Gosh, what's the other one?
Prime Video.
No.
Voodoo. No, Voodoo.
Peacock.
Okay.
Yeah. We're watching on Peacock. And yeah, dude, it's just, it's easy. It's dumb. Yeah. It's other people's problems. It's hilarious to look at other 40-year-olds who are behaving like absolute children and feel a little bit better about yourself, who's an adult and a parent of absolute children, being like, oh, okay, I'm doing okay in my life. So yeah, and it's just, it's easy.
Nice.
Yeah.
I got to get back into it.
Yeah, dude. I told you, James lives like right by you.
That's wild. That's wild to me.
They're walking on your bike path, dude. They're walking on your bike path.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't wait till you turn on that show one day and you see me drinking a shot of tequila at James's house and like talking about the podcast.
Oh, James, big fan of the podcast, by the way.
Anybody James, know that? James and Taylor Swift both listen to the podcast.
Big fans.
Milena believes this too. This is great. I can never let her know the truth. I think, you know, so we initially, as you mentioned earlier, we recorded this episode during Halloween. And so I'm going to talk about what I watched in Halloween. I'm going to talk about a series I just finished up too. So during Halloween, I was watching Fall of the House of Ushers and I loved it. It's just like this slow burn, creepy, like kind of like mind bender kind of show. It's really fun. And I like that kind of stuff, especially during that season. So, you know, it's all based on the works of Edgar Allan Poe. And so if you're into that kind of thing, I think you'd really like it. I've really enjoyed it. And I can't remember the creator's name, but typically his work has been good stuff for me.
Nice.
The documentary that I just finished watching on Netflix is the one about Pepsi and how they screwed over that kid, he's like a teenager, that kid when he should have gotten his Harrier jet. He should have gotten it. Remember that from the 90s?
Oh, man. You know, that doc is really good. That docuseries.
Yeah. Did you watch it?
I did watch it. Yes. It's also super interesting to get the backstory on sweepstakes. There was one that they made about the, you remember the McDonald's? The McDonald's sweepstakes, Monopoly ones, right?
Yeah.
And there was a whole like mob scene, literally like mobsters trying to, who did successfully like run one on McDonald's. The world of sweepstakes is fascinating.
It's wild.
But that one, dude, yeah, like you're like, God, this kid deserves a jet.
I'll tell you, dude, you know, this spoiler incoming, if you haven't seen it and you want to, spoiler incoming in 3, 2, 1, here we go. So at the end, he doesn't win the lawsuit, right? And I really loved the way they kind of wrapped up the show though, right? Like they're like, is these two guys, this kid who was in his like 20s and this guy who's funding everything that he was doing in his like 40s. And the way they kind of couched it at the end was like, you know what? I didn't get my multi-million dollar settlement or payout, but what I did get was this like journey with this friend of mine and we're still friends. And what do? We go hang out, we climb mountains together. And this was a mountain that we climbed that we couldn't quite surpass, but we've climbed these other mountains. It's built this lifelong friendship. And that's their takeaway from this. And it's not, I should have gotten $1 million. I should have gotten multi-million dollars from this. It was, I went on this journey. I tried, I failed, and I've done this other great thing that's probably worth more to me than the millions of dollars would have been, right? So I think that's really beautiful and it's really good perspective when things are shitty, you know? Like there's, things are only as shitty as you allow them to be.
Right.
You know? I mean, I say that, but, you know, of course, there are real shitty situations, right? But like, you know, it's all perspective.
Yeah, it is perspective. No, and I forgot about that part of, I forgot about his financier.
Yeah.
who was helping him with the project. So it was a while ago when I watched it, but I did like that. And I liked, he reminded me of guys that I knew that I grew up with, guys who I'm still friends with, who are like, they have a crazy idea and they're super ambitious about it and they just chase it down. And it's like, even though the kid doesn't get the jet, it inspires you to do something like that. Like it inspires you to be like, go ahead and try really hard at the thing. Yeah. It's good. It's good.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Yeah. Good, man.
Yeah. All right, man. Takeaways.
Well, you know, I'd love to hear from our audience how you guys have dealt with mat bullies, how you guys have dealt with bad behavior, both with your kids or your training partners, and how did it work out? Right. You know, I think for me, it's that we're all kind of just continuing to grow and evolve. And we said this a couple of times in the show, is like a lot of this stuff is out of ignorance or just inexperience, right? Like whether it's bad behavior from our kids or bad behavior that occurred when we were early in our jiu-jitsu career. And some of it is related to being just an immature or not a good person. And that stuff can be weeded out, right? Like that stuff, you, at least when it comes to training, you weed that out. But a lot of it can be counted up to just not knowing. And hopefully you have someone around you that can help educate you.
Yeah.
If you're that bad training partner. I'm babbling again, dude. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You're good. I just wanted to say one more thing about bad training partners. And this is a message for anybody who is either like, let's say like you're a woman and you feel uncomfortable, or you're any person who feels unsafe in that space. I will say there is power in turning down somebody to train. Like when somebody asks you to roll and you say no, which you are always entitled to do, 100%. There is power in that. And it lets that person know who you turn down that, you know, something's not right. And if more people do it, that'll give them pause. That'll give them a chance to be like, oh shit, maybe there's something going on. You know, and like, you don't have to be rude about it or whatever, but one, if you feel unsafe, you're totally entitled.
Absolutely.
To say no, you're the one who's right in this situation. And there's plenty of other people for them to train with. And two, it's important that you say no, because that lets them know I'm fucking up. So that leave that there.
It is 11:06 PM and I sound like a babbling idiot, and you always find a way to be so freaking eloquent. I don't know how you do it, dude. You're a poet.
No, man. This is we're on autopilot. This is when I'm usually sitting up writing content. That's why.
This is when my brain's turned off and I'm watching TV shows about Pepsi and thinking like, huh, where's my heritage at? That's a good idea.
All right, y'all. If you want to drop us a note, like I said before, shoot us an email at grapplingwithfatherhoodpod@gmail.com. You can find me on Instagram at Blake of Today. Uday, where do they find you?
Udjitsu, UDJITSU on Instagram, or gorilla.den.bjj on Instagram as well.
All right, y'all. Until next time, protect your necks.
Peace.